And once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 on your FM dial, www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man, and on today's program, we'll be talking with Asad Abu Khalil, Associate Professor of Political Science at the California State University Stanislaus, and the author of the books Saudi Arabia and the United States, The Tale of the Good Taliban, and Bin Laden, Islam and America's New War on Terrorism. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll discuss the recent crackdown on journalism in occupied Iraq and the wider implications for a supposedly liberated country. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up next. Sewage is coming through the manhole covers. There's still only 15 hours of electricity a day, and anarchy grips the streets of Baghdad. But yesterday, America's toothless Iraqi interim council roared like a lion, issuing a set of restrictions and threats against the press, of course. Aimed primarily at the Arab satellite channels Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, which always airs Saddam Hussein's tape recordings, the almost Orwellian rules, each of which begins with the words, "Do not," mean Iraqi or foreign press and television news organizations can be closed if they advocate the return of the Ba'ath Party or issue any statements that represent the Ba'ath Party directly or indirectly. So begins a recent article titled "Iraqi Broadcasters Risk Being Closed If They Put Saddam's Voice on the Air," written by Robert Fisk of the London Independent. The Al Jazeera network and Al Arabiya networks were officially suspended for 2 weeks from covering any official government activities. The claim is that the networks are inciting violence against U.S. forces who have occupied Iraq for almost half a year. Joining us to provide some context about this crackdown on free speech in Iraq and to talk about the wider implications on future press coverage is Asad Abu Khalil. He is the author of Historical Dictionary of Lebanon, Saudi Arabia and the United States, The Tale of the Good Taliban, and Bin Laden, Islam and America's New War on Terrorism. His articles on Middle East politics and society have appeared in English, German, Spanish, and Arabic. Asad Abu Khalil is Associate Professor of Political Science at California State University Stanislaus and Research Fellow at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at the University of California at Berkeley. He joins us by phone from his home in Northern California. Hello, Asad. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. I can barely hear you, by the way.
Okay. How's that? Any better?
Much better now.
Okay, great. Can you begin with your reaction to this recent ruling by the Iraqi Governing Council on the networks?
Well, I think there is absolutely nothing surprising about it. We have a tyrannical rule that the U.S. colonial administration has imposed on Iraq, and everybody in the region and the world have noticed, except here in the United States, where the ruling government is still invoking words like freedom and liberation, and this is being cynically manipulated to affect public opinion, and that is also slipping from the hands of the administration, as we can judge by recent polling. There are two aspects to what happened. First, this is not the first time. The U.S. colonial governor in Iraq, Paul Bremer, have more than once basically violated civil liberties and rights and freedom of expression in Iraq. American troops have entered into newspapers' offices, computers have been confiscated, and there are scores of journalists who have been arrested in Iraq. I mean, first of all, we don't have a really accurate tally of how many people are arrested in Iraq right now. We used to think that some 5,000 are in U.S. custody, and now recently, the Guardian newspaper in England revealed that, in fact, the number may be double, 10,000. And most of them, if not all, have not been charged with any crime, and they are in a state of legal or illegal limbo. And, in fact, many families do not know where their brothers and sons are, and they have been taken away. In addition to that, there are certain rules that the U.S. administrations have issued that smack of the language that Saddam Hussein has used. For example, they say that there is no legal permission for any publications or newspapers that would engage in incitement to violence or radical militant discourse. I mean, this is the language that Saddam has used himself, and I don't know if they are borrowing now from the language of the secret police of Saddam, and it wouldn't be surprising because, for those who do not know, the U.S. has dissolved the Iraqi army, but has, in fact, rejuvenated and kept almost intact the secret police of Saddam in order to use it for its own purposes. The second aspect of what happened is directed at Al Jazeera. The U.S. government has been very unhappy with Al Jazeera, and there's a long record of U.S. attempts to intimidate them. They bombed their offices in Kabul by mistake, they said. They bombed their offices in Baghdad by mistake, they said. They killed one of the reporters in Baghdad when the war started by mistake, they said. And, of course, the U.S. government has, on more than one occasion, by their own admissions, put pressure on the Qatari government to pressure Al Jazeera so that they will be less free in their expression of views throughout the Middle East. And, of course, this all is ironic at a time when the U.S. government is invading countries, launching wars, all in the name of democracy, human rights, and, of course, that overly abused word, liberty.
There's an Al Jazeera TV journalist, Taser Alouni. He's been detained in Spain since early September of this year on allegations that he has a key role in Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda network. Do you see this as maybe any tied into the recent actions in Iraq on Al Jazeera?
Well, I mean, by the way, I can barely hear you. Yeah. We really have a bad connection now. It's getting worse, in fact.
Okay.
One of the things about this case is this. I'm a big fan of Al Jazeera. People tell me, is Al Jazeera like CNN? And I always tell them, no, it's what CNN should be like. It's much better than CNN. And, you know, I should say that I also appear on Al Jazeera frequently to offer my opinions along with other Arab channels. Taser Alouni was made famous in the war in Afghanistan because he delivered fresh live report from that country. Now, people say Al Jazeera is biased. I personally, without taking a stand about you know, whether he's guilty or not of the charges, say that he struck me more than any of the other reporter of Al Jazeera as being the least detached and more partisan. I could tell when he was reporting from Afghanistan that he was rather sympathetic to the Taliban and to the bin Laden message. Having said that, I mean, so for me, he was the most biased of Al Jazeera reporters. But I do not know whether he is guilty of what he is being charged with, which is involvement in Al-Qaeda or not. So I basically say, because he's a reporter and because the case is attracting a lot of publicity and attention throughout the Middle East, and because the United States has a long history of intimidation of Arab media, particularly of Al Jazeera, and because the Spanish newspapers and media are reporting that much of that case comes from Israeli and American sources, it is absolutely essential for the Spanish government to expedite the trial, and they charge him with whatever crimes that they are charging him with, and let's see whether he will be convicted or not. So I do not know the details of the case, but I say as a viewer I have noticed, he was rather partisan and quite sympathetic to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in the past.
You talked a little earlier in the interview about the bombing of Al Jazeera in Afghanistan and the bombing in Iraq. On April 8th, U.S. military forces launched seemingly deliberate attacks on other independent journalists at the Palestine Hotel. And, as you mentioned, on the Al Jazeera office in Baghdad, there was 3 dead and 4 injured in those attacks. Then a U.S. soldier shot and killed Reuters cameraman Mazen Dana on August 17th. And just this week, U.S. troops were basically vindicated, so says Lieutenant Colonel George Crivo. Quote, although it's a regrettable incident, the investigation has concluded U.S. forces personnel acted in accordance with the rules of engagement. What does this say about coverage of military actions in the future if this was in accordance? I mean, they claim that Mazen Dana was holding a camera that appeared to them to be a rocket launcher. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I have not seen cameras that look like rocket launchers or tanks. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do exist, but I have not seen them. And those who have seen the camera that Mazen Dana was carrying, they say that it was like the cameras that you and I have seen. But maybe the U.S. Army have seen cameras that look like rocket launches and bombs and so on. So I don't know about that. But I will tell you this. The conclusion of that story is simple. It says that whenever the military investigates itself in America or elsewhere, it rarely finds itself to be guilty. In fact, just yesterday I was reading that Ricardo Sanchez, the military commander of troops inside Iraq, have also investigated a case where some U.S. troops shot at dozens, killed dozens of Iraqis, and surprise, surprise, they also found them to be innocent of any wrongdoing. They said that they were quite justified in shooting at scores of Iraqis.
Coverage in this country...
Again, the connection is really weak, and I can barely hear you.
Okay, I'll try to speak up and Hopefully it won't be too loud for our audience here. The coverage in this country, we're not getting, you know, accurate pictures of what's happening there on the ground. We only hear reports when U.S. soldiers are killed, and we're not hearing about any Iraqi civilian casualties. Can you talk about that?
Well, it seems to me this is something that's quite, unfortunate, that there's very little attention to how many innocent people get killed. I want to remind the audience that in the first Gulf War, according to U.S. Navy figures, which were published in the book by Rick Atkinson, No Lefty, he's a Washington Post reporter, in his book Crusade, we know that in the first 40 days or so of war in 1991, there were 88,000 tons of bombs and missiles that were dropped on Iraq. Of those bombs and missiles, 88,000 tons, something like more than 70% of them missed their targets. One more time, 70% missed the target. This is not unusual, by the way, in the cases of bombing and wars, even with high technology. People may say, what about those high-tech smart bombs? Well, smart bombs are 10% dumb bombs, and smart bombs are very expensive, so they are not always used. Perhaps they are spared because they are expensive for wars against people whose lives may be seen as more precious to the lives of dark-skinned Muslim people like Iraqis. On this war, we don't have accurate figures yet, how many bombs, how many missed their targets. Again, I'll tell the audience, in Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan, which was supported by 93% of the American public, according to U.S. Central Command figures, the end of March of 2002, something like 22,000, exactly in fact, 22,400 bombs and missiles were dropped on Afghanistan. Of those, according to the Central Command, 25% missed their targets. We estimate that something like 4,000, at least, Afghanis have, civilians, have been killed in that war. More so as we speak, more innocent Afghanis are being killed almost every week, in fact, with very little coverage or attention. I should say that there are more conservative estimates of innocent civilians in Afghanistan. The New York Times gives a very conservative estimate. It says that something like 1,000 or 900 civilians, innocent civilians in Afghanistan were killed. In this war so far, according to the count that is being kept by Professor Mark Herold at the University of New Hampshire, it now has exceeded 7,000 innocent Iraqis have been killed. And the number of soldiers killed, we don't know. The Pentagon hasn't even released figures from the war of 1991. Robert Fisk, in a recent article, estimates that, in fact, something like 1,000 Iraqis are being killed on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Yeah, the one estimate I've seen actually has it at 37,000 dead Iraqi civilians thus far, just since...
37,000?
37,000, yes.
No, that doesn't sound to be accurate to me, because I keep very close tabs on who is counting and how many people are being counted. That strikes me as very high. The reliable figures I've seen, it is fair to say now it is around the 7,000. Maybe the figures you've seen counts soldiers, but no, it's that strikes me as too high.
Hmm. Getting back to this issue of the Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya being banned, this week, just in fact today, President Bush has been coming under fire for spending $20 billion on reconstruction in Iraq, including $9 million to modernize the postal service and create zip codes. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan said the postal system in this country, quote, helped to bring the new nation together, it helped support the growth of commerce, and it helped ensure the free flow of ideas and information. Taking these two stories, the banning of Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, and this, can you talk about the hypocritical stance coming from the Bush administration?
Well, White House support for Iraqi stamps is quite touching, but let me elaborate on the subject. I think people should know that the $87 billion are by and large mostly going to the effort of the military. The rest of them are going for, not for stamps and postal services, but going for more sinister purposes, in fact. We should say that this war of liberation, between quotation marks, entails in the new budget $400 million for the construction, among other purposes. It includes, among the many items of expenditure, if one I want to look closely at them as I have, they include $400 million for the purpose of creating new expanded prisons that would house 4,000 prisoners each.
Wow.
Now, this is very important, but in fairness to the U.S. government, they probably will need them. I mean, the rate of arrest in the Iraq now for the U.S. government is going at such a rate that they probably will need more jails, and we probably would need another $1 billion just for prisons and jails in Iraq. You see, liberations and wars of liberations have their cost, especially when you require jails, arrest, and a lot of prison system for the cause of liberation.
Again, my guest tonight is Asad Abu Khalil, Associate Professor of Political Science at CSU Stanislaus.
I was promoted last year. I'm full professor now.
Oh, great. That's
good. Okay.
And he's also the author of the books Saudi Arabia and the United States, The Tale of the Good Taliban.
And that's going to be forthcoming.
That's coming out from
Seven
Stories Press. That's not out yet.
I'm sorry?
That's not out yet.
No, it's not out. I'm done with it. It should be coming out in a few months. It's available on Amazon.com already, though.
Okay. That's where I saw it, in fact.
Right.
And the other book, you're also the author of Bin Laden, Islam, and America's New War on Terrorism. On the media coverage, you write in Bin Laden, Islam, and America's New War on Terrorism about, in Chapter 6, September 11th, Views from the Middle East and the Muslim World. After the attacks on this country on that day, millions of Americans saw footage of Palestinian and other Arabs celebrating the attacks in the streets. Can you talk about why, what the view is of America in the Middle East and why they would celebrate the attacks on
our
country?
Well, I was just in the Middle East recently in Lebanon and Syria, and I can tell you that just as some Americans wonder why they hate us, in the Middle East they wonder far more loudly about that, because we did suffer a horrific event September 11 where innocent people were killed by the dastardly deeds of the fanatical group of terrorists like Bin Laden and his followers. But people in the Middle East feel that they suffer their own September 11s very regularly, in some cases like the Palestinians at the hand of the Israelis, and the innocent people of Afghanistan and the innocent people of Iraq. I mean, Saddam Hussein, that monster, is still alive, but innocent Iraqis have been killed. Mullah Omar and Bin Laden are still alive, but innocent people in Afghanistan have been killed. And people wonder why America's bombs are being dropped on their heads. And they do not find that America's bombs or Israeli occupation to be pleasurable or enjoyable, even though they are invoked in the name of liberation, emancipation, and all these lofty ideals. In the Middle East, people feel that Americans or Israelis relish their misery. There are many people in America who have cheered the bombing of Iraq or the bombing of Afghanistan. And in the same vein, there are some people who were insensitive to the suffering of Americans after September 11. But I would say that these were the very small minority unrepresentative views. I can tell you and assure you, based on somebody who follows very closely the Arabic press and Arab political literature, that by and large, even among Islamic fundamentalists, there has been widespread condemnation of the terrorist acts of September 11 in much of the Arab and Muslim worlds. In my travel in the Middle East, I always, especially in Lebanon, which is rather relatively free, and you see all sorts of political graffitis, I never once saw any graffiti that was pro-Bin Laden. Bin Laden has clearly failed in his effort to win any support among Muslims or Arabs. So his popularity is often exaggerated in the U.S. media.
Can you talk a bit about you also write in your book, Bin Laden, Islam, and America's New War on Terrorism, of this phenomenon that you call Islamophobia, and there is a common misperception in this country of Islam as an evil religion. You are a secular humanist, but maybe you can talk about this phenomenon.
Well, I personally can attest, having lived in this country and who teach about Islam in the Middle East, that there is a lot of ignorance about Islam in the United States, and I also believe that there are some people within Christian fundamentalism and outside it who have strong hostility to matters Islamic. And because there's ignorance, all sorts of assumption can be made about Islam. And, you know, I speak on this subject with little objectivity. I mean, I'm an atheist who do not have any sympathy for any religion and don't personally understand why a human being need religion. And I also look at history and feel that religions, especially the three monotheistic religions, have very easily, and other religions, have embraced violence very casually. I mean, they seem to think that just war is any violence in the name of my religion, and unjust war is any violence by another religion. And I also believe that, however, that to say that Islam is in any way more violent or more dangerous than any religion, that would be totally inaccurate. I mean, there is no holy book that I have seen or read that contains more violence, vengeance, and in fact strong divine condemnation than the Old Testament. But I do believe that we should not hold the people who follow those religions responsible for the acts either of the few individuals, and we should not assume that all members of the faith act according to every single verse in their holy book. But I do believe that as part of the agenda against Muslims and Arabs in the United States and the West in general, there is a segment who are driven by utter hatred for Muslims and for Islam. There is quite a bit of fears and of hostility against Muslims and Arabs, and you read that in the mainstream press. I mean, to be bigoted against Islam and Arabs now is acceptable in most circles in the United States, perhaps outside of Santa Cruz and Berkeley, but in many other parts of the United States.
Can you offer...
Even in Berkeley, I should add, even in Berkeley. I mean, you take a leftist place like Berkeley. I have a student of mine at UC Berkeley, and she told me after September 11, she was spat on Telegraph Avenue because she was wearing a veil. She's an Iranian-American who wore the veil, and people spat on her on Telegraph Avenue. This is the center of hippie activities, the 60s nostalgia, and even there is prejudice against Muslims.
Can you offer any strategies to unlink the two terms? Oftentimes, you know, Islam and terrorism are linked in people's minds. How do we, as progressive activists, unlink those?
Well, it seems to me that we have to reach a point where people should make an effort to know and learn about other cultures, other religions. And I wish that the education system in the United States, as it is in Europe, will incorporate much more foreign language training, more knowledge about geography. And it seems to me we should also treat Islam like any other religion and treat Muslims like any other people. You know, one of the symptoms of prejudice is that we act as if the acts of the few are representative of all of them, many, all of them combined. And if somebody who is Muslim commits one act, it is treated as if it's representative of all of Islam and all of Muslims. I think it is time that we consider that Arabs and Muslims should be entitled to their shares of crazies, murderers, kooks, and terrorists without us having to generalize about all Muslims, all Arabs, and all of Islam. Just as we accept that Americans are entitled to have their own shares of, you know, crazed postal workers and murderers and criminals and terrorists. All people have their own shares, and we should not generalize about any people, any religion.
We have just about 7 minutes left, so maybe we can end here with a little hope, but I have a couple questions, so I'll try to get to them. AP News is reporting that Secretary of State Colin Powell said the U.S. would like Iraqi leaders to produce a new constitution in 6 months, paving the way for elections 6 months later and a return to self-rule. Many progressives in this country have debated this issue, and there seems to be two common arguments developing, one being that the U.S. cannot abandon the people of Iraq and should have a presence in the country until such time as a stable government can be established. The other side of this argument would have an international peacekeeping force under U.N. control in Iraq. What is, in your view, what is the best way forward to achieve Iraqi self-rule?
I personally believe that we shouldn't even be debating this. I think this is a matter that I personally thought, and I may be mistaken, that it was settled in another century. And the conclusion of the debate was, if I am not mistaken, that people of the world are all equal. They do not need to be held by the hand by the white person. And they not need to be liberated by somebody coming from Europe because they come from a superior race. For that, I refuse this entire debate on whether that the Iraqis should be liberated by America or by Kofi Annan or some special committee. I think the subject should be dealt with very decisively through an insistence on self-determination. We should ask that the American army leave Iraq. Saddam's regime is gone. He will not be back and should never be back. The Iraqi people will take care of that, I am sure. We should instead call for a special commission of the United Nations to administer the withdrawal of all U.S. troops, and the Iraqis can manage their own affairs by themselves without any help, and the wisdom of the white man notwithstanding.
I concur completely with your analysis of that. I guess then maybe you can offer your thoughts on what should happen now. I mean, this war is illegal. Let's call it what it is. It's an illegal invasion and an illegal occupation. But the U.S. has abandoned the International Criminal Court. What then, what kind of recourse is there for kind of punishing these people who are in power?
Well, I think we should say that this war is illegal, I mean, doubly illegal. I mean, it's illegal in the way the decision was made to go to war against international law and international organization and without the will of the United Nations. And it is doubly illegal because in the course of the war, there is a clear case that many conventions and treaties and laws governing the conduct of war may have been clearly violated by the American war machine. So in that sense, one is troubled in more than one way. I should also say that the recent statement by Colin Powell in the last few days are not innocent. They come not out of any sudden awareness on the part of the administration that we need to have the Iraqis have their own self-rule. It is due to pressure. This is thanks to the Iraqis themselves who are making their demands very loudly to the Americans. They do not want to be ruled by somebody else. They want to have their own self-determination. And also thanks to the intervention of other countries in the world like Russia, France, and the Europeans, and among others, who make it very clear to the Americans that they are not going to help the Americans to get out of this mess if the Americans do not commit themselves to a transition in Iraq towards a democratic rule, which the United States doesn't seem to be that concerned about.
Well, I guess we'll leave it right there. We're just about out of time here. I've been speaking tonight with Asad Abu-Khalil, professor of political science at California State University Stanislaus, and author of the books Bin Laden, Islam, and America's New War on Terrorism, and the forthcoming Saudi Arabia and the United States, The Tale of the Good Taliban, which will be out soon on Seven Stories Press. I appreciate your time tonight, Asad Abu-Khalil.
And thank you very much.
We look forward to hearing from you again.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And that's going to wrap it up for us tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. Join me again Monday at 5:30. I'll be back with more on these subjects. Stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org.
قالوا لي راح ومشى قلت انشد على هواي قالوا لي راح ومشى قلت انشد على هواي لو طرت حد السماء يا هواي اريد وياك لو طرت حد السماء يا هواي اروح وياك شنو العمر لو رحت وانت بروحي صرت شنو العمر لو رحت وانت بروحي صرت